If you want to ask questions to the speaker. Unfortunately, right now I cannot hear you I cannot see you if you stand in front of your microphone. Thus, I would kindly ask you to go to either on Twitter or Mastodon and use the hashtag RC3R3S, or go to Hackint in the IRC on the channel RC3-R3S. All are numbers and letters. Also, we are streaming on Twitch and YouTube. You can search for our streams by using the remote Rhein-Ruhr stage. Use it one word or three words, whatever you like. You will probably find it. So, to go on from here, about our speaker, he is studying industrial design in Eindhoven, and part of his thesis is this talk. And he wants to illuminate privacy from the aspects both of design and development, as he is both a designer and a developer. And this talk was presented also at the Dutch Design Week. So give it up for Lai.
Right. Thank you so much. Let me get right to it. So hi there. As I said, I'm Lai. Currently presenting from this man cave in Eindhoven, the Netherlands. Software engineer by trade, designer by education. And some of you might wonder, what does that mean? Well, it means that I have an interest in a couple of things in the overlap between both of those fields. So there's privacy, there's personal information, and there's also user experiences. And simultaneously, it means I can cherry pick the aspects I like from both fields, while also blatantly ignoring all the same practices that have been set in both fields. That will be a recurring theme in this talk. So let's talk about this personal information. I want to share a story of my personal information as well, and taking control of it specifically. We'll be talking about personal information a lot. So let's consider what personal information is for a brief minute. By law, personal information is any information that is related to you as an individual. It's sort of infectious. See, as if your hand that just touched the elevator button is information. And as soon as you touch your face, it's infected. Link to your name, it's personal information. Data point linked to your IP, it's personal information. Link to a hashed bank account number, it's personal information. If it can be connected to you in any way, it's considered personal information by law. And what's more to know about personal information anno 2020? So we know that governments care little for our personal information at this point. We know private corporations care little for personal information, unless we pay for it, that is. In fact, we know our personal information is actively being used to manipulate us. And consequently, we know that about 6 out of 10 Europeans worry about a lack of control over their personal information. And here, I'll just assume that the remaining 4 out of 10 haven't been paying attention. So, where do you even start? It's very easy to feel sort of overwhelmed by this knowledge that we just ignore it. We get into sort of Stockholm syndrome, where we still dive into the YouTube hole or the infinite Facebook scroll with a "this is my life now" attitude. What did you do last night? Well, I went on a 6-hour bender last night, watching Kim Kardashian's wedding, How the Earth is Flat, and elites drink baby blood in satanic rituals. It was really inspiring. Well, that's a joke, of course, but it says enough about 2020 that this is apparently closer to reality than the self-lacing shoes and flying cars we were promised. So what can I do? We've got all these issues. How can I make a difference? And that is, how can we actually do, what can we actually do besides becoming digital hermits and casting our devices into the fire? And we as hackers, engineers, and privacy junkies answer this question often somewhat condescendingly. Like, oh, sure, it's easy. Just delete your social media accounts, block some ads and trackers, join the Fediverse, petition your members of parliament, maybe write some new antitrust legislation yourself, prosecute the rich elites profiting off our data, drive a van filled with magnets to the Facebook data center, and walk barefoot across a sea of lava to cleanse your iPhone in Mount Doom. I think a better question here is, what can we feasibly do as individual citizens? What can we do to sort of skirt the life-upending decisions while still making a tangible impact when it comes to the average citizen's privacy? And let me do some cheerleading here for specifically the GDPR. I personally think it's a fantastic set of laws that solve some of these problems. And some people might disagree with me here. Like, is it a perfect law? No, sure. Were some of the concepts prior law as well? Yes, of course they were. Has it eradicated big tech power, failures of the human condition, and brought world peace? Not really. But remember that individual aspect of doing something, anything. This is where the GDPR does make a difference. So let's unpack this whole thing that we call the GDPR. Not the entire thing, of course, but let's cherry pick precisely the aspects that help me play to its safer complex strengths. Fundamentally, the GDPR is about consent and transparency. So first, there's consent, the idea that you get a say about what happens with your data. And I'm going to skip any further discussion here, as the state of it is depressing enough as is, so anyone else can go and clean up that mess. Rather, we'll talk about transparency. Transparency is the notion that organizations that process your personal information provide truthful information of what they collect and how they process it. Just like in Christopher Nolan's latest movie, transparency can move forwards and backwards. Forwards transparency are the data processing registers and the consent notices. This is what we're going to do to your precious data. Backwards transparency is the look at what you've made me do of personal information. Fortunately, we have a more sexy sounding name for what we can do here. And it's called data rights. So during the GDPR lawmaking process, the lawmakers had some fun. They felt generous like Oprah. And as a result, we ended up kind of coincidentally with a set of rights related to our data. There's the right to access your data. There's the right to rectify data that's incorrect. There's the right to erase data if you don't want to have it there. There's the right to restrict certain data if you want to, certain data processing. There's the right to notification of what it is processed. You have the right to take the data along with you. And you also have the right to object to data processing practices of your personal information. And these things are pretty powerful. All EU citizens get to enjoy them, and they get to exercise them with whomever is processing their personal information. You can basically go up to any organization and say, this is a robbery. I want my data. And they have to comply. Not complying is expensive. Fines are up to either 10 million euros or 2% of global turnover, whichever is more. So not less. That's ridiculous. So when I found this out, I felt like quite the hacker that I was going to be. I'm going to go out, I'm going to retrieve all my data, and there's no one to stop me. So I did. I actually went out to about 59 organizations to which I sent data requests. And this was all kinds of companies. I sent them to big tech, I sent them to insurers, banks, dentists, doctors, bakers, hairdressers, public transport companies, basically any company that is in on this whole digital transformation narrative that seems popular today. And this is what that looked like. So this is an actual request in legal mumbo jumbo that allows you to gather your data. And I want to shout out to My Data Done Right. That's a Bits of Freedom initiative, among others. That helped me generate this mumbo-jumbo quite easily and send it out myself. And I sent most of those by email, as that was the sort of standard for these kind of things. But for some of them, that didn't pan out as smoothly as I wanted it to. So for some, I actually had to go and print them out, leave my house, and put them in a physical mailbox in 2020. I'm not even kidding. In one case, I had to actually physically come over to one organization's headquarters to sign a form and elaborate in person what I was actually doing and why I wanted to do it. And breaking some character here, I actually have to hand it to Big Tech regarding the amount of engineering hours they've invested into making requesting data a half-decent experience. They've got this particular thing figured out. So when we're talking about the Apple, Facebook, Spotify, Instagram, LinkedIn data request platforms, they're actually not that bad. They're the best out of the bunch. But it's the only compliment that I will be giving those kinds of companies during this talk. Because fortunately, those practices were contrasted by almost everyone else doing the worst possible job. At the 30-day mark, which is the legal limit for responding to data requests, about 40% of requests was still unanswered. And still about right now, so I did those in March probably, 9 months later, 20% of those requests still remain unanswered. And that's just painful to me. And it doesn't even include like all the back and forth emailing I had to do, the reminders that I actually had requested data, that it's been 30 days, and how almost everyone asked me to send a copy of my passport in plain text email. It was just not great. The experience wasn't great. But then we get to go over the actual responses, and like I want to go to my favorite one first, and this is where a bank sent over a mail courier to my house, which they announced about a week in advance, who asked for my passport, then checked it, made a copy of it, took that along with him, and then handed me this USB stick. I have it laying around right here. It's a fun piece of memorabilia. This USB stick contained the data that they sent back to me. And even though I like data being physical a lot as a designer, that must have been a ridiculously expensive operation for them to do, especially as more people start asking for their data. And then on the complete other end of the spectrum, I sent out a request to the Dutch Tax and Revenue Service, which returned to me this six-page middle finger, basically flat out rejecting my request unless I made the request very detailed and very specific. And while I expected some corporate backlash, I must admit that I was kind of caught off guard by the whole European government agency being completely hostile to any notion of user data rights. It was kind of off-putting. But then we get to the actual data that I got back. So this is a tiny piece of what I received. I received over 2,200 files covering all parts of the data spectrum. So of course, there's CSV files, there's JSON files there, there's XML files. But more often than not, I encountered Excel files, HTML files, JPEG files, screenshots, PDFs, text files. In some cases, I received data via the mail, so I had to either scan it in myself and then get all the data in. And you can go on and on and on. Like there's a ridiculous amount of returned types of data in here. And while I read JSON fluently, there's also the point of the massive influx of data that made it very hard to grasp what it actually meant to me, all the data that I retrieved. And I'm not alone here. A couple of scholars went out and requested all of their data in a similar way. One researcher actually ended up getting access to his colleague's data by just spoofing their email address. There was no authentication or check whatsoever. The secretary basically just assumed that the email was valid and sent the whole dump of someone's personal info over to a complete stranger. And they also found that passports are regularly sent back and forth using just plain text email. Particularly Wong and Henderson found that over half of the responses they got to their data request did not comply with the machine readability standards that are set forth by the GDPR. But if there's any common ground between all of them and myself, is that the process was exhausting, frustrating, and ridiculously slow. In fact, it was so poor that I haven't considered using any of my data rights ever since those experiences. It was horrible. So that's why I wondered to myself, can't we do better? And I mean this in an end-to-end sense. So can we do the whole process from regressing your data, to getting it, to viewing it, to storing it, to actually doing something with it, getting insights, all of those things. So that's why I built Eon. And Eon is pretty simple. It's a desktop application that does exactly this end-to-end stuff of personal information. So there's the request, there's the archiving, there's the getting insights. And I'll briefly walk you through how that works for a regular user. So first of all, there's this account overview where you add all of your online accounts. So right now you can add your Spotify accounts, your Facebook accounts, your Instagram accounts, your LinkedIn accounts. There are ways of adding other accounts, but I'll get into them later. And as soon as you've added an account, you can start a data request for it. And that basically means that you get a window where you enter your credentials, and then Eon will do all the clicks that are necessary for you. And that's it. Your data has been requested. The only thing you have to do is wait for it to complete. And then Eon will let you know, like, hey, it's been a couple of days. Your data request is complete. It's in now. Let's have a look. And when the data request does complete, it just pulls in that data automatically, and it stores it safely on your local disk. And this is where you have the opportunity of actually inspecting it. So you can see a small hint of that in the right bottom corner, where there's an overview of all the data points that came in from a particular data request. But there's better ways of looking at it. So seeing your data chronologically is one option. There's also a categorical overview where you can just see the different categories of data. But you can also view all your data as a graph. And here's where you can more easily inspect what's happening. So you can see the data types, where the data came from, which account, which platform, and the individual data points as well. And I'll give you a demo of that shortly. And then you can actually inspect single data points, individual data points. This is specifically a ad interest data point that was in the LinkedIn dump. And once you have that concept of a single data point going, you can actually bring in that right to rectify that we talked about in the beginning. So if you have the data, you can actually say that this is not a data point that I want you to have, and object to it, basically. And in Eon, you can select a bunch of those data points that you would like to see deleted. And then Eon will help you generate an email that will ask the provider in the, again, legal mumbo jumbo that's right for these kinds of requests to delete those specific data points. You just open it up in your email client and send it off. That's basically it. So before I show you that quick demo, I want to introduce you to Olaf. And Olaf has grown quite close to me over the past half year. I've learned that Olaf likes Formula One, he likes football. He's actually a junior football coach over in his birthplace of Veldhoven. And we've grown so close, in fact, that he felt comfortable that I gather his data and display it publicly for all of you to see. I must admit, though, that Olaf had little choice in the matter, because just like trickle-down economics, Olaf isn't real. I fabricated him as an alter ego for me and a set of study participants to work with during the Eon development. But you'll get to learn everything about him in this short demo. So let me move quickly out of this presentation and go over to the next screen, where you'll see the actual Eon application going. So here's this timeline overview where you get to view all of the recent data requests that came in. So specifically, there's tiny ones for Instagram, where apparently a couple of ad interests got deleted. You can see, for instance, if you think those ad interests are very interesting, you can browse by them one by one and see where they're coming from. By and large, they're coming from LinkedIn in this case. And this is that graph overview for Olaf specifically. So here you can see the Facebook, LinkedIn, Spotify, and Instagram platforms, and how those data types relate to them. So for instance, LinkedIn and Facebook both have extensive place of residence type data points for Olaf. So the Olaf I came up with, basically. And when you go out and click a specific data point, you can just delete it and then find the generated email quite easily over here. So that's it for the short demo. Let me come back to here and then start answering the hard questions. So now that you've seen everything, your original question should be, how does this all work? And remember that thing I said about disregarding sane engineering practices? Well, if you are an engineer that really cares about native software practices, this is probably the moment where you want to step out and mute the stream for a couple of minutes, because I will not only promote, but defend and actively encourage practices that will, by those people, will probably be decried as heretical. So while we wait for them to leave, I'll reveal that basically for Eon, everything is Electron. It's TypeScript, so that's JavaScript, almost all the way down. And for those not in the know, Electron basically packages the web browser Chrome into a desktop application. While that's not a new idea, Electron, in my opinion, is the first mature attempt at doing so. And it's consequently used by a lot of applications that you use on a daily basis. So think Microsoft Teams, for instance, which we have been locked into for the last couple for this year, this last year. And there are a couple of reasons for using Electron in this project specifically, and I'll tell you about them. So first of all, there's the Electron browser APIs. So we do a lot in the background to make sure that the user doesn't have to do anything. And as all the platforms are basically front ends only, so they don't expose any APIs, we just default to making clicks on behalf of the user. So we open up this window, the user enters their credentials, and then basically we just use this browser window to make clicks for them. So we click the specific button sequences and pages to get that data request going and actually download it in the end. And this means we don't have to do any password storage magic whatsoever. We can just rely on native browsers. And that means we use existing flows without complicating stuff for ourselves. And then there's the developer experience and the prototype ability of an Electron application. So on the right here, you see a base implementation of Instagram provider. So this is basically the code that does all the clicks and pulls in the data. And the whole thing that does all of it is about 200 lines, most of which is boilerplate. And since it's plain old TypeScript, a lot of people can get involved quite easily. The bar threshold is very, very low. And then again, the application runs at whatever platform you can throw at it. So it goes for Windows, macOS, whether it's Intel, Apple Silicon. It can do Raspberry Pis. It can probably even do your home-cooked BSD distro if you wanted to. There's no platform-specific code in Eon yet. So all the platforms benefit from the same changes immediately. And then the last one, which is probably the one I will be crucified for, but I'm sticking up for it. The web has superior cross-platform user experience. There's the rich DOM, there's React patterns that make creating a recognizable, accessible UI from scratch exceedingly easy. For the rough-based view, I just used Cytoscape.js to prototype it in literally a couple hours. You can't beat it with native stuff. Everything's modular. You build a data retriever on the left side, about 200 lines, and then you can just use a JSON-defined schema to pick out the data points from all the returned files and the data types that are associated with them. And because all the data is local, as time moves on, the schemas get better, and Eon is able to show you more of the data that you already have. Lastly, email's modular too. So we've currently got a Gmail integration that actually reads out some email for you, but we can use this to send out email as well. So if an organization isn't already covered by Eon, we can basically just send out an automated email to them, and when they don't reply, start spamming them with reminders. This works for data request removal of data removal requests as well. So if you want to delete data, we can just automate the process as well. And we can make all of that a lot more inclusive. Last but not least, where does all the data go? It's basically a local Git repository. So we use native libgit too. Not only does it make storing subsequent data requests super efficient in terms of storage capacity, It also makes it really easy to diff the changes between various states of what is essentially your identity. Everything is open source, so you can go over to eon.technology to get started with it. There's some docs there, and we're also on GitHub. Contributions are warmly welcomed. If you want to take Eon for a spin, just let us know your feedback as well. So GitHub issues is definitely open for that. Or if you want to help out, then come into GitHub and we'll figure something out. And one thing I wanted to highlight as well, while Eon has the potential of greatly increasing what little user experience there's currently in data rights, when it comes to data rights, it takes two to tango. So there's you and there's the organization that you're whipping into actually retrieving your data for you. And given that, I wonder whether we can make a similar leap forward for organizations as well, as this will massively increase the user experience for a regular user. So this is where the Open Data Rights API comes in. The premise is very simple. Every organization exposes a single endpoint for user exercisable data rights. Third-party applications can then implement that endpoint and do data rights work on behalf of their users. This could be Eon, but it could just as well be any other front end. It doesn't really matter as long as there is the single point of entry. And this makes all the front ends for exercising data rights modular in the end. This is sort of double whammy. Eon makes it easier to get a complete picture of your data, while organizations can rely on the already existing front end for all their data rights stuff. There's no need to homebrew it as an organization. So the first proposal for that is already available. So it's in api.opendatarights.org. And I encourage you to go have a look and comment on it. All of that stuff is based on open source and well-known and implemented standards as well. So there's OAuth for authentication, and there's schema.org for data typing stuff. A demo implementation of the Open Data Rights API is available on demo.opendatarights.org. Just as well as the Eon implementation of it. So if you want to take it for a spin, you can just plop that URL into Eon, and it will actually let you pull in some fake data. I was supposed to show you a demo, but in view of time, I will shortly skip it. All that stuff is open source and available as well. So either on whitepaper.opendatarights.org or on GitHub specifically. Contributions are again welcomed, so come and have a look if you're interested in that sort of stuff. So with all of this work having been presented, it's probably time to come to a final conclusion. And I would like to propose the following. Like, I want to start out with a definition that Matthias Funk and I wrote about a year ago about how the concept of privacy and user experience are intertwined. Making privacy work means getting the details right for a wide range of users. I believe getting it right makes a difference between control over your data being technically in place versus actual meaningful control. So when it comes to making privacy work, we need to negotiate design, technology, and legislation very well. Let's bring those forces closer together in the future. And in that vein, also let's consider Eon as basically an SDK for data rights, but now incorporating user experiences and a basis for compliance. If we get that balance right, organizations and citizens stand to gain. So in that privacy UX vein, we could apply this pattern even more broadly. Reusable modules that get the technology, legislation, and user experience just right when it needs to be. If you can't think of a place where this kind of standardization is more needed, it's probably time to think again. And I won't delve any deeper into that. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to all the people that have made this journey possible. Those at the Eindhoven University of Technology, at SURF, at Bureau Moeilijke Dingen, and also a shout out to all the RC3 volunteers making all of this stuff work during their Christmas holidays, especially this horrible times. Particularly the folks over at the remote Rheingau stage in Mannheim for providing me with this stage. Cheers, and thank you.
Thank you very much for this excellent talk. I was muted, apparently.
Yeah, no worries.
Let's go straight to the questions. I really liked the talk, by the way, and the really awesome project. I will probably personally look at it. So the first question is in terms of the GDPR, asked from FF. What exactly is machine readability? Is it digital, AOCR compatible font, or something else?
And that's quite a difficult thing. So the GDPR does have some guidelines for it, but I don't think it goes a lot further than machine readability. And this is where like the law and technology are kind of off from each other. So in particular, that paper, so that's Wong and Henderson, if I'm right, they define machine readable as actually being able to get data points in a JSON CSV-like format. And yeah, that didn't pan out greatly for them. So at least what I expect is if there's data in sort of structured format that I receive in a structured format rather than printed out on a piece of paper and that I have to enter it into Excel or whatever database myself. I would say that that's the low bar.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that. In the over in the IRC, Irgendwer 61 asks, if your project, if Eon is open for contribution, is there already a standardized guide for implementing a new online services, implementing new online services for data requests?
Yes, so there's docs available. So if you go over to docs.eon.technology, I've made a short guide into like how this process sort of works. So basically, I call it a provider. So that's the piece of code that gets the data actually is a standardized class with a couple of methods that do that kind of work. And the fortunate thing is like the available, the examples from Facebook, Spotify, Instagram, and all that sort of stuff are available. So you can basically just model it on that, try it out locally. And then if it works for you, contribute it in a pull request. I will be very happy to take any of those.
Okay, let's hope that they contribute to your project and add more possibilities to stick it to the big tech as yes, you exactly. as you did put it. So there is a new question from the IRC. What is in development for the future of Eon? So what are the prospects? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, so like I can look at it very bluntly in terms of features. So I think for Eon, there's still, of course, lots to do. So better automation, making it easier to get to these organizations that haven't yet automated some aspects of doing data requests. So that's where that email stuff comes in, getting some extra services in, getting it a bit more user-friendly. I've spoken to a lot of people who've used it who, for instance, like some more context, like I have this huge amount of data, like, will you tell me what I should particularly be looking at? That's probably an interesting one. But more broadly speaking, I think specifically the Open Data Rights API has some promise at looking at the industry from a bit of a larger perspective. So I would love to see if we can implement that somewhere, basically anywhere, and take it further from that. I think the open source community can be very helpful in that regard. I would love to see some standard established, such as the Open Data Rights API, to make all of that stuff just a little bit easier. So that's what I want to be working towards.
Sure. Sounds like a good way to go, and since we don't have any more questions, so a reminder: if you want to ask your questions, you can either tweet them or toot them at hashtag RC3R3S, or go to over to our RC on Hackend RC3-R3S. So one question I have: you seem to have gone through quite the adventure by requesting your own data. What kind of data do you request from a bakery?
Yeah, because that's the funny thing, right? So of course the doctor and the dentist sort of make sense. I think for me a specific one was my hairdressers actually. And yeah, like you wouldn't expect them to have any data, but now nowadays, like all of those small little retail shops have CRM systems. So if you do some business with them on the regular, you're probably in one of those systems, and there's probably data collected about when your appointments are, or your email address, or which is very helpful, by the way. They sent me actual meeting requests via email. I love that feature, but it requires them to store some data as well. So I was just curious what I would get back, but I didn't manage to get through to them. So I never got to find out. That's the pity. But like in this day and age, I don't think there are lots of companies left that don't store any personal information.
Yeah, sure. I mean, even if it's the hairdresser that notes your number down when you make the appointment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Even that's personal data. So there's also another question again from Irgendwer61. Will there be a one button to send every company a please delete all my data requests?
Ooh, that could be. Like, do you want it? That's the question.
I mean, since they're asking so many questions, I think that they might contribute it. It would be really interesting. Also,
yeah.
to classify the data, maybe to say I want every tracking data deleted, but like my personal data, like my name and so on, you can keep that. Yeah, that would be also interesting. Also, there is a question from our moderator, or from IRC, I don't know. Somebody called Mod. Anyway, what kind of data do you request from a bank?
Oh, from a bank? I need to dig deep to get into actually. So it's this USB stick, which I used for Tiki, which is a Dutch service for doing basically peer-to-peer small-scale paybacks to friends and whatever. Can't recall specifically what data I got back, but data, there's lots of data that banks gather, and like your transaction details will be the least of your worry, probably, because like banks also do your insurance. So they collect information probably on your age, your health, your occupation, all that sort of stuff that makes it easier for them to tailor their prices, products, etc. to your kind of stuff.
Okay, so our time is running short, and we have one final question from webuser238. Are there any common traits about the 20% companies that haven't replied? Size, sector, etc.?
As I said, this is one of the areas that the big tech companies do have everything put together. So I got basically requests from every one of them except Facebook. I don't have an account there anymore, and they claim they didn't have any data, but there's no way for me to figure out. So that's also still a problem. And then, like the non-requests, like I mentioned, my hairdressers, I just didn't get to the right person in time, and I didn't have the time and effort to actually dig down to that rabbit hole. But it's usually like the smaller end of the spectrum, as the larger companies do have some fear for the fines they might find themselves getting. So at least there's some sort of compliance department over there.
Okay, so I think that's it. Thank you very, very much for your talk. I'm sure people will find you on the interwebs to communicate you. Do pull requests. You heard him, people. Go and make this thing a standard. And again, thank you very much. And off to back to the break. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thanks.